So, as Albert Einstein had said, he inspires me in so many ways. He had said, to raise new questions, new possibilities, to regard old problems with a new angle requires creative imagination and marks real advance in science. Anupam Pathak is an engineer, entrepreneur, research scientist, science teacher and enthusiast, and a seasoned volunteer. Anupam is the founder and CEO of Lyft Labs. Lyft Labs aims to use technology for social good. The mission at Lyft Labs is to uplift people in spite of illness or disability. We will be hearing today about some of their inventions aimed at helping people with essential tremor and Parkinson's disease. Apart from leading Lyft Labs, Anupam teamed up with his mother and created ExploraBox, a nonprofit organization with the mission to provide hands-on science education to all children. ExploraBox creates theme-based science kits that are designed to help children perform science experiments in a safe and fun way, thus enabling children to learn core principles and explore scientific concepts at their own pace. The kits are sold at a very subsidized price or given away on many occasions. The donations from selling the kits go into creating more kits and providing science kits to children in low-income communities. Here is a snippet from one of Anupam's blog posts on his experience at a science fair where they had a stall for ExploraBox. "We overheard a dad saying, 'We cannot afford it. I do not have a job.' But the kid really wanted the magnetism box. We tracked the dad down and gifted them the magnetism box. The dad came back almost in tears. This makes it all worthwhile. Another child was brought to our science fair by his neighbor and was mesmerized by our microscopes, but kept saying he could not afford one. The neighbor ended up gifting him one of our boxes for his birthday. His response, 'You got me a microscope? Yay!'" Anupam's life is a beautiful interplay of empathy, technology, innovation, and social good. Anupam, we are so honored to have you as our guest today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I thought it'll be nice for us to start with, knowing if you can just tell us a little bit about your childhood and your life experiences that have shaped your love to integrate technology into doing social good.
Sure. I grew up here in the Bay Area, and was really fortunate to have two parents that were, they were engineers in the 70s in Silicon Valley. And just growing up, I think I just really enjoyed making things. And like I was always just kind of, whether it was like art projects or just things that kind of just putting things together with my hands. And was really encouraged to do this, both at home and at school. And I know my parents, they did get me like a lot of these science kits that were just a lot of, I really just had a lot of fun playing with. Or like electricity, chemistry, and Legos, and all of that. And I think doing that, by being able to play with these kits and learn at home, got me excited about science and kind of, I feel like even today it's sort of the same exact emotions and feelings that I had when I was little, when I'm building something, totally different. And it's just the kind of persistence and knowledge that like you're just building this for that reward at the end where it works, or suddenly like almost in an instant, everything kind of like fit together and starts working. It's like you turn on the machine and it works, so you kind of write your program and that happens to work. And that satisfaction really drove me when I was little, and still drives me today. And I think that's really what we're trying to do with ExploraBox, with these kits, is to get kids to really think about science in a different way. I mean, it's a different way to talk in the classroom, engineering, and kind of being a pupil and just kind of absorbing information. But in practice, I don't think that's really what it's about. It's more about the patience and the persistence, and then working towards that reward that you get when, you see your design working, or you see it actually helping people.
I'm just struck by the fact that you said your parents had, they used to get you science kits when you were growing up. What a beautiful way to instill a love for science. And, you know, I think little would they have thought that that love that they instilled for you in science would now transform into you creating these beautiful boxes for so many children. So big kudos to your mom and dad for doing that. Apart from your parents and how, you know, their love for science and encouragement has helped you, who are some role models who inspire you, and how do they inspire you in shaping your ideas and dreams?
I think there's a whole bunch of different, like, you know, when I was little, I had some really, really great teachers that, just were so encouraging and, really motivated me to keep working on things. But I think today, and probably more relevantly to our company, which is what we're, you know, the technologies we're developing for people with tremor, I think there are several role models. I think there was a person who was working on designing prosthetics for people. But I think traditionally what's been happening in the past was that a lot of the medical devices and prosthetics were just designed on function and less about empathy and less about kind of making sure that the person who uses them feels good, understanding how they're feeling, first of all, and second, making sure that they feel good and proud of what they're using. And there was an industrial designer that started making these, interviewing the people who are actually missing limbs. He would interview them and find out what they like and what they, what kind of person they are, and custom make the prosthetic to fit them, like their personality. And his goal was that he wanted them, like people, to feel comfortable walking around with shorts. And so, for example, there was one person that was really into woodworking, so he made that a beautiful leg out of wood. Whereas another person might be more into biking, and so he kind of made it out of carbon fiber and a little bit more like the types of products that he would use. And I really think that that is the direction we really need to go in terms of designing, especially for people who are already might be feeling embarrassed with the conditions that they have right now.
I think that's a great segue to talking about Lift Labs. I was looking up some of your products, and, you know, like with the Lift Pulse, it's a phone app, so it's not hard for people to take that, and it integrates itself into your regular life. And even with the spoon, it looks so sleek, and it actually looks very cool. You know, it wouldn't seem like a medical assistive device. So this might be a good segue to just talk about what your mission was behind creating Lift Labs, and then maybe we can go into some of your products.
Yeah. The mission was really to help people who are suffering every day, basically, and there's not with little solutions out there right now. And so, yeah, I think really the philosophy of what we're trying to do, a lot of people with tremor from Parkinson's or elderly people with essential tremor are really embarrassed with the condition and don't want to attract attention to themselves. And that's really what kind of what they're feeling. So with the spoon that we've developed, I think we really wanted it to just disappear into the background. I mean, it's really effective in allowing them to, feed themselves, but we didn't want it to be like a focus of attention. And so I think that's really what we're trying to work towards, is just having, making it extremely small and compact, and someone could just pull it out of their pocket and use it without feeling like anybody would really be noticing. And then with the apps, that's another direction we're kind of looking into. Right now, those are just free and available for people to use. And I think the goal with those is more of a right now a research and scientific goal, as well as helping the patient understand their condition. And I really think people with chronic conditions need to feel empowered and feel in control of what's going on with the whatever disorder they have. And so in this case with tremor, there's no real good way to measure it. And people are taking drugs or different different therapies, and it's really just a trial and error thing right now. There's no quantifiable way to tell, like, is this working or versus before. Mm-hmm. And so we're just trying to collect, anonymously collect as much information as we can about essential tremor, so medications, amplitude, and just track history over time, and then see if we can analyze and find, be able to answer some important questions through there. Mm-hmm. So that's in the future. We might run some studies on that.
I see. And just to give our callers some context, it's most of your, I think, and correct me on if I'm wrong, most of your interventions right now are focused on people with Parkinson's and with working with kind of mitigating their tremor or kind of reflecting it in a different way so that they're able to function.
So the first, one big thing, which is what our first product is people can't really feed themselves. The tremor is so bad that they end up just spilling everything before it even reaches, a spoon would even reach their close to their mouth. And so we've developed a system that can sense the person's tremor, and then, so in this case with the spoon, it would move the spoon opposite to what the person's tremor does and keep it from spilling and allowing them to eat. And I think just having people try it and seeing the effect is just so, I think it's really, almost a loss of dignity when you can't even feed yourself. And so seeing someone go from that to being able to just comfortably eat is really amazing.
Yeah, and that's what comes up for me, dignity, just for them being able to even, to even sit with a group and have their meal. Some of them might be right. So embarrassed to even have a meal to be able to give them that dignity. I wanted us to kind of take a step back and talk about how Lyft Labs kind of started, but even before I go there, could you talk to us about maybe some of your, trials with patients and how some of your maybe impressions on how it was helping them and just some of your experiences with kind of actually helping some patients use the products, especially the spoon.
Yeah, I think, last summer we actually did formal clinical trials at the University of Michigan in the hospital. And so we had about 15 people come who had essential tremor. So this is, essential tremor is something that you probably see it in a lot of elderly people, 60 and up. And it's the more and more people get it as the age increases. And so I think many of you can think of somebody with tremor. And so as it progresses, it gets to a point where people have difficulty just doing daily tasks. So we, during the trials, we got about 15 people who said that they were having trouble with eating and tested them with a spoon. We had them try basically eating with the spoon turned on, and then we did it with the spoon turned off. But we blinded them. We didn't tell them whether it was on or off. But the difference you can see is just, almost night and day for a lot of people. It's just spill it versus, spilling everywhere versus successfully being able to move, food up to their mouth. So that was, I think the reactions from, especially from the spouses, like a lot of them came with their spouses and they were, they were just being able to feed themselves without any assistance was a really big, kind of a big thing. And today we're making about, we're making units just actually this week and giving them to people to try at home. And I had one person use it for about 2 weeks, and she was saying that it just, really makes a difference with eating. But she also found that doing things like cooking or measuring sugar and things like that, she was, able to use that without asking for her husband. Normally, her husband would have to do that for her. So she was really, really happy to be able to do that. And then she said another thing. Her friend's baby was at her house, and she said that she wouldn't even try to feed the baby, but using this spoon, she was actually able to do that. So she was, I think overall, just really, really happy about being able to do these things without that she wouldn't have been able to do before.
Beautiful. I can imagine her sitting with the baby and feeding the baby, and how much of, how empowered she would have felt doing that. So I'm just, how did you even come up with this idea? I mean, I know you're an engineering graduate, but to be able to think about, okay, so here are these patients, they have tremor and not addressed tremor. How did the phenomenal idea just come about?
Well, it started, again, it just started from a very general thing that I was working on during my doctorate, and the question was, how do we stabilize just tremor? Everybody has kind of hand tremor to some degree. You see it when you're doing things like really fine needlework, or for me, when I'm doing soldering and things like that, it shows up. So we were looking at just ways to cancel that in general. And so that was more of what my thesis was. But then I knew that there was a large population of people who have amplified tremor. And so that's, there's various neurological disorders that can cause that. But I started talking to some neurologists at the hospital, and understanding this problem more and more, and really seeing that there aren't that many solutions out there that people find useful. And so that's really where the idea came from. And then right before I graduated, or right kind of when I was graduating, I applied for a grant from the National Institutes of Health, and that ended up coming through. So we were able to get some government funding to develop the product. So that's how it all started in the beginning.
Okay. And is that kind of how also Lift Labs, did Lift Labs come about right after your school?
It was about 6 months after. So I was in, I was at a different, I was at a solar company, and for about 6 months or so. And then once the NIH said that they would fund us to work on this, then that's when we started the Lift Labs. So it was about mid-2010.
I see. So just thinking about, being a scientist, I don't think I'm one, but just thinking about it and thinking about how you have to kind of keep an open mind and be objective, and yet, you have to kind of balance the empathetic side of you, so you're coming up with products that are truly benefiting social good. What are some qualities you think that help you towards that end as an investigator and then as an entrepreneur who's able to bring these innovative products to the society?
So you're saying the balance between science and...
No, I'm sorry. I'm saying the qualities. I feel like there are, some specific right brain and left brain qualities you would need to balance being a scientist and being an entrepreneur. Because at least as I think of some scientists, they're, those who spend a lot of time, and this might sound a little cliche, but, they might spend a lot of time in the lab. They come up with these great innovations, and they are not necessarily the people who are carrying it out and being the CEO of a company or having to do the task of being a manager. And, I feel like it's a lot of different skill sets. Are you conscious about instilling those qualities in you as an entrepreneur and as a scientist? Or have you even, do you consciously instill those qualities, or does it just come naturally to you?
I think one important thing is working very well, like being able to work very well with other people. I think that's really you can't, or what I've found very quickly was that it's not sustainable, and you cannot even really do it is developing products or developing ideas in on your own or in a vacuum. So there's such a heavy reliance on the feedback from people who would be using this. And we were in touch with several support groups in the Bay Area. And I was actually just talking to two of the leaders yesterday and telling them, like, we wouldn't have been able to do this if it weren't for them. Like, we were basically, I was going there maybe once a month and showing them what we had and just getting feedback. And we're still getting feedback from them, and especially on whatever else we end up coming up with. So they're really part of the process, and I think it's really, really important to be able to I think have them, well, and is what we're doing is first priority is really making something that would help them. And so having them feel like they're part of the process is really important. And then the second thing is whoever we're working with, just having really, really good team and really making sure that there's an environment of nurturing and growth for the other people involved, that they're getting things from working on the project, whether it's direct satisfaction and helping people or getting experiences and knowledge that would help them in the future. I think just being able to be conscious, I've been like lately just trying to be very conscious about for everybody working on this, making sure that they're getting something back and that their plate is full from that perspective too.
So, as you see Lyft Labs in the future, what are some of your ideas going forward? Are there specific diseases that you're interested in learning more about and trying to find assistive devices for? And also, maybe you can touch upon how, what your vision was initially as you started Lyft Labs and how it's kind of changed now or taken its own course, if it has.
Yeah, I think it hasn't changed too much from when we first started. I think one of the bigger things was making sure that our products were useful and that they were successful and helping. I think that was a big thing, and whatever else we come up with, that's like the number one kind of concern is that we want to make sure that many people end up benefiting from its use. And so the direction we're going in is we're focused on the spoon, but it's not just what we've developed is not, doesn't just have to be a spoon. So the spoon is just something that you attach onto the end of this stabilizer. And so we're looking at what other things people need help with, and can we create things that can attach to this general stabilizer that we built? And so that's something we're looking into. We're looking into Parkinson's and seeing if there are ways that we can provide assistance. I think one of my friend's dad has Parkinson's, so I've been actually the past couple of years just meeting with him pretty regularly and trying to understand his difficulties. And one big thing is just kind of mobility. And so I'm trying to think about what we can do to help with that. But then in the future, it's hard to tell. Definitely we're looking into other medical devices. But for now, we're focusing on motion disorders, and specifically with tremor.
Kind of shifting gears a little bit because I want to make sure our listeners hear about Explora Box. Can you, I I was about to ask you what inspired you, but you just told us about how your parents had instilled your love for science and science experiments. Can you tell us about how your mom and you came up with the idea of creating ExploraBox and just, you know, how it got about its inception?
Yeah. Well, I think my mom really wanted to do, I mean, this was something that she really, really wanted to do. And she was a retired, she's a retired engineer, semiconductor engineer. And so I think she just really wanted to start volunteering with helping kids in math and science. And she still does volunteer at various schools. And so she kind of, a lot of the schools, especially in lower income areas, the teachers either don't fully understand, like they don't come from science background, and they're just overwhelmed with trying to make sure that they meet with the curriculum and just get the kind of minimum that the students need. And because, you know, they're just overwhelmed with trying to understand a subject enough to be able to teach it, and so then they're kind of overworked. And so one big thing that's missing is, you know, making it fun too, and having hands-on activities that kids can do. So my mom's been started helping in the classroom and kind of supporting the teacher and helping the kids kind of learn the material, but also do these activities. And so then the idea of the kits really came because we were trying to figure out how to reach more people and how to get, you know, one person just volunteering in one school doesn't have a huge reach. So we came up with the idea of maybe we should just develop a organization that makes really, really fun kits and can get kids kind of doing things on their own at home, not necessarily at school. And just talking with my friends who, when I was in school, you know, all the people who are doing their PhDs, they all have a similar story where when they're young, they remember their science kits that they were playing with. And I don't know, just seeing that kind of common pattern and that people were, I think people who end up choosing to go into science and choosing to stay there, especially in grad school, have just kind of an interest from all along, from when they're little. And most of them were playing or doing things on their own, not necessarily just through their school. So we wanted to give that as a gift to more kids, and especially the ones whose school either doesn't have that as a resource, or their parents don't recognize that as something that's important, or they can't afford to get those kits. So we're trying to create really engaging hands-on kits that are also affordable and can reach basically everyone.
Beautiful. I'm, you know, being an educator myself, I'm just excited at the prospect of children having these kits and being able to explore those science concepts, because it's really, when you look at those, when you look at lessons without the experiments, it honestly doesn't make sense half the time. You end up memorizing it or not really connecting the concepts. It's such a phenomenal idea. So, I was actually looking through your website and looking at the cue cards for the magnetism box and the electricity box, and I see that the cue cards have very easy directions. It's so user-friendly, and it's really written for anyone to be able to follow. It has pictures, and I see some very, you know, very efficient teaching principles that have gone into designing these. Can you tell us about the process of how you create a box? And it's just so child-friendly and simple to use, and I was curious about that.
Well, first of all, we're not ExploraBox is, we're not really, everybody who's involved are volunteers. It's a totally volunteer-run group. And so we have people, and we're looking for more people who have expertise in certain areas that they would like to create a box with. And so, you know, we have professionals and scientists and people with their PhDs in chemistry and electricity who've been helping create the content. And I think that was one big thing, was just finding, we're almost trying to curate the right experiments so we can kind of show some really basic phenomena that a kid can put together and do that at home. And all we want to, we're one big thing is that we're providing all the materials to do that in the kit. And so, yeah, we were just looking for very simple yet beautiful experiments that you can do. And with the instructions and kind of the graphics and everything, we had some friends kind of help create that as a template, but then we're using that moving forward. So one part of the process was having kids use our early kits when we were first starting, and the instructions were very text heavy, I guess. So we were explaining in paragraphs, like, you know, take this magnet and try to flip it over, and, you know, doing things like that. And we just got some very direct feedback of no less words, more pictures from everybody. That's what they said. So we did that. And so we really just want to have pictures showing what to do. And I think just watching kids do it, they just open the box and they'll start like playing and putting stuff together. So that's what we use the pictures to kind of guide them. And then the idea is to have them do the experiment and then start to kind of wonder what's going on. So at the very end of our instructions, we have actually written out, like, you know, explaining some of the theory. I think, you know, for example, in the magnetism box, we talk about, you know, what's going on in the microstructure to cause these forces, and how do you, you know, how does an electromagnet work, and things like that. So first they experience, and then they can learn more about what's going on.
Awesome. I was also looking at your blog and how you go to all these science fairs, and there were beautiful pictures of children doing these experiments and you kind of, you know, sipping coffee and looking on it. Just that picture tells a lot about what ExploraBox is about. You know, it's about adults stepping back and making it totally child-centered and letting them kind of investigate and experiment on their own. So that was a really beautiful picture, and it told a lot about what ExploraBox does.
One amazing thing I wanted to share was at the previous science fair, there was a volunteer, a young volunteer, she's like middle school age, named Ruchi, and she came early, and so I just showed her all of the stuff that's going on, and she was just like, why is this happening, why is that happening? So then I told her exactly what, you know, why these experiments are doing what they're doing, and then she ended up showing everybody. So we were able to, like, and that was actually really, really great. I think having kids teach each other is something really, really powerful, and they can just play, and that's really what we would want to do, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's beautiful. I can imagine her just standing there and, you know, taking on the lead. That's, that's a nice image. So how do you manage your time between, you know, being the CEO of Lift Labs and doing something like ExploraBox, because both can be pretty time consuming, and I'm sure they have a life of their own. So how do you manage all this? And
I think they're the two are very different organizations. So when the former obviously is most of my time right now, and then. But with ExploraBox, I think the really nice thing is that we're not really, I mean, the goal with that is just to grow and have more impact, and we're not really relying on money. I think whatever, like with our model, we're selling kits above our cost, but then we're subsidizing below the cost. So we're not really, we're just trying to be self-sustaining that way. And so that ExploraBox is really just all volunteers and all people just really enjoying helping out. And I think it will grow that way. And so I think my time there is just whatever, like, I would just do for fun. Like, I might read some experiment online and then want to try it out. Like, right now I have an egg in my refrigerator that I've dissolved the shell from. So it's kind of like a soft, squishy thing. So I just read about this online and wanted to try it, and now I'm taking pictures and we'll put it on the blog. I think that's just, things I would just do for fun anyway. And then curating the kits and things like that, I think eventually we just want to have more and more people volunteering and have it kind of just take its own life that way.
So one thing I wanted to know from you, Anupam, is what are some of your spiritual practices? I know you've been volunteering. You've been a past volunteer at Karma Kitchen, and you wear many hats, and you wear them so well. What are some of your spiritual practices that ground you and that help you to stay focused on all these beautiful things that you've planned for your life?
I've been going to, well, I have been for many years going to different Wednesdays or Fridays, either in Oakland or I haven't been to a Wednesday in a while, but I'd like to come soon. And I think that's really been kind of helping focus or learn how to kind of get rid of all the distractions. I think it's really sometimes when I'm working on all these things, there's just too much going on at once. And then it's when you're trying to do multitask and you don't actually end up doing much at all. And I think just practicing the mindfulness and kind of focus is something that really helps. So I think those are, yeah, really meditation's kind of a big thing for me.
Okay, so meditation is. I recall you telling me when I had a conversation with you earlier this week about how you consider yourself non-spiritual, but you see the effects of meditation. I found that really
Yeah.
interesting.
Yeah, I think what really got me interested in the beginning was actually my roommate who's actually he lives here now too, but we were roommates in Michigan, and he was a scientist in the psychology department, and he was showing me some studies that were showing, like, people who practice mindfulness meditation. They were doing brain scans and found that certain areas of the brain were thickening and there's actual physical changes. And so that's, he actually got interested in, he went on the Vipassana retreat in Michigan. And so then that's kind of got me interested too. So there seems to be some like actual changes happening in the brain, which is like, I thought it was really fascinating. And then in general, I think a lot of my kind of sense of wonder and everything is really driven by just whatever, all the new things that we keep learning in science. And the more we keep learning, the more we realize how complicated the universe is, how complicated our brains are, and how much we don't know. And I think whatever new things, new discoveries we do learn are just sometimes just really, really fascinating and makes me rethink, understanding of what actually is going on.
Hi, Bill.
Oh, hi. Yeah, gosh, it's really a fascinating topic. I'm in a Unitarian men's group, and a couple of the guys are in various stages of Parkinson's, and some of them are really depressed because they feel useless and they're declining. And it dawns on me that it would really probably be a benefit to them if you still needed some test subjects or people to work with for developing
Yeah.
products that would give their lives more purpose and focus. So I'm wondering, would that be of interest, and is there a good way to contact you about that?
Yeah, definitely. I think I can give my email. It's
A-P-A-T-H-A-K.
I can send it out, Bill. Anupam, after this call, I will send a mail to everyone.
Okay.
I will include Anupam's email. And any other links you want to share, Anupam, you can send them to me, and I'll share with everyone on the call.
Excellent.
Okay. But I think just to answer the question, if it would, I would love to work with them, and even for ideas that I have down the line. And I think you're right. It does give people kind of a sense of hope. And I think if nothing else, just kind of meeting with them and showing them what I'm doing, getting people excited and kind of following a product development, I think I'd love to involve them in that.
Yeah, I think that would give them a lot of hope.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Audrey. Thank you for sharing so far. I had a question about, so it seems like you've kind of managed to find this balance of work that serves a lot of people and then also Explorer Box being all volunteer run and that you've volunteered at Karma Kitchen. And I was just wondering, how has your own service journey deepened through these projects?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think, especially with Explore Box, it's kind of similar to Karma Kitchen in that it's, kind of all volunteer run. And it's sort of, I mean, we're trying to figure out, I think a lot of what we're trying to do is grow organically and kind of figure out exactly how we want to reach more people. So I think it's so much about community and kind of growing that. And that's kind of what I've realized. I think it's you can't just do things alone. It's all about finding people to help and kind of getting everyone really excited about something new that we're doing.
That's great.
Something related, I thought, on a poem. I was just wondering, what do you think, like, what is the drawback or the difference in taking, like, an empathy-driven approach in this capitalist society or, planning for a profit, having profit as a motive as against having empathy, like, what difference does it make to the end product? And do you have any thoughts about or the sustainability of your product or company? And
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of I think the capitalism can be used as a as can be used or it can be abused. And I think there are many cases where getting the resources and growing and being like financially healthy is really, I mean, important to being able to impact more people. I think that the capital, raising capital is basically raising resources that allow, allow you to scale and reach more people that you couldn't do if you didn't have that. And I mean, one example is just our being able to manufacture our product. Like we need to raise capital to do that. And otherwise we wouldn't be able to have, we wouldn't be able to get these to be affordable, basically, for people, for the customers. And I think also having like, I mean, having a healthy company means that you can get, more employees and get, people working for you, and also like just affecting those people positively is really important as well. So I think, yeah, I mean, people need to, but it's about kind of growing and having everyone have a nice, good livelihood. And so I don't know, I don't know if they're necessarily at odds with each other.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, this is a really interesting conversation, and thanks so much for sharing your time with the community. Kind of related to Gunshan's question, and maybe you are kind of touched
Sorry.
upon this. Maybe you kind of touched upon this, but I was curious to know, because you're motivation is, creating empathy-driven technologies for people with diseases like Parkinson's, how do you try to ensure that these empathy-driven designs are actually accessible to the larger population, you know, to low-income people? Mm-hmm. And along those lines, do you also maybe have a greater vision of making these products accessible to, in developing countries?
Right. Yeah, I think that's accessibility is that's something that we are definitely trying to figure out. And so there are different ways. I think there is some kind of, a potential for some sort of almost like a pay it forward model where if someone were buying a product for themselves or one of their family members, they could maybe fund, an additional amount that doesn't get touched by us. Maybe it goes to a foundation, and then we could help either subsidize a unit or kind of match that donation, and then that can go to somebody who couldn't afford to, like they're in financial hardship, for example. The other thing, and this is maybe a long road for us, but if we can get assistance from things the government, like Medicare or even other foundations, that can also help with accessibility. Mm. And then third world countries, one thing from a design perspective too is cost reduction. So if we can reduce the cost required to produce the product, then that would also help with accessibility.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
Hi, Anupam. That's an excellent talk, and I have been looking at your website. And so just want to let you tell you that I think you are very spiritual, even though you don't think you are spiritual. I think all the things that you do are really make you very spiritual, more than a lot of people that I know. And I'm in the Brahma Kumaris, and I have always felt like there are people out there who don't necessarily belong to a spiritual group, but are very spiritual, I think that. And so thank you for that. And I think a part of my question was answered by you with Bela and Kanchan about providing to explore a box to kids in India. I think if the language is changed to Hindi, and especially for the villages where they're not really being taught English, they're being taught Hindi. And I think that paid forward idea is great, because I do go to the villages in Mount Abu and would love to have something like paid forward every year when I go. The second thing is I'm not sure if there's anything out in the horizon. My godmother and my mother always feel that despite all the hearing aids out there and everything, they can't really hear their children when they are in the U.S. So, and I've tried different phones and everything, and it doesn't really work. So maybe that's something you can do, because I also give talks to retirement homes in India, and they all have the same complaint that they cannot really hear their grandkids, you know. So it would really be something that would be interesting and very helpful to the retired population. Again, God bless you. You are extremely spiritual. Thanks.
Thank you. One thought when you're talking about Explore Box in India is that we are, I think that's something we'd love to do. And we can translate the instructions into Hindi. The other thing is maybe if we find somebody who could, we can kind of open source our whatever our kits are too, so that they could be just made in India. And the cost would be much less as well. So that's an idea I think that we can definitely pursue.
Hi, I have another question. So I was wondering, this past year I've been working with kids in kind of teaching them about sustainability and environmental issues, and I was wondering if you're in your Explorer Box, if you integrate current science-related problems into it, like climate change or waste reduction or things like that.
Yeah, So we don't have a sustainability box yet. So maybe you can make one for us. But one thing that I came up with, we're working on, is a nutrition box. And there's, I mean, you keep reading about the problems with like childhood obesity, especially in poverty, and diabetes. Those are all like things that are just, you know, just from poor nutrition. So in that box, everyone, like, trying to lecture anybody either. So it's, I mean, it's mainly just getting kids to see for themselves. Like, so we show how to read a nutrition label. Like, what do all those numbers mean? And actually have you measure out, like, okay, so if you're supposed to have 20 grams max of sugar. So you can kind of like measure out that much with a teaspoon and kind of pile that. And then we could say, okay, here's a Coke. Like, look at the nutrition label. How much sugar is that? And it's 35 grams. Pile that on the table. And it's already like one can of Coke is more than what you should have.
Wow. I think I need that Explorer box.
And then the other things, like, you can actually chemically test for saturated fat using iodine. You can chemically test for vitamin C. So these are all things that experiments you can do in that kit. And so I think, to answer your question, yeah, we'd love to do something with sustainability. I met at the previous science fair, there was a guy whose his whole organization was based on climate change and measuring carbon dioxide. So I think if there's some simple things it can do in the kit, that would be a really great kit to make.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
If I'm more than with the compassion that is coming from, I could hear compassion in your responses. And I think it's really beautiful. And it's about your personal journey and challenges that have come up along the way, not necessarily science-related challenges in terms of the technology you're developing, but personal challenges. Were there times when, in the beginning, when you thought, is this really possible, you know, empathy-driven design that's not conventional, you know, and what were you up against? Personally or professionally or, you know, socially, if you were against anything, and how have you overcome some of your challenges?
Yeah. I think I couldn't hear the first part, but so you're asking what challenges I've had along the way that aren't necessarily technical?
Yeah.
I think, yeah, there are many. I mean, it's not easy to just, I mean, I think a lot of people who you might talk to are just basically starting from trying to pursue an idea, and they kind of start that on their own. Like, little things might come up that kind of, like, one day you'll kind of question the whole thing. Like, I mean, it's not, I feel like it's so much easier, or it's very, it would have been easier to just have a job at a larger company, and I don't know. So sometimes, like, some days you kind of question that, but then other days it's everything's going, like, so well, and you're so happy. And I think many people have the same experience. It's like the ups and downs are a lot more higher and a lot lower than it would have been otherwise. But I think that's part of, I mean, I talk to many other people, and it's very common in doing a startup that's how it is. The rewards, I think, in the end, having people using the product and seeing it work is makes everything worthwhile.
Yeah, I could imagine the Explorer box kits and these kids, you know, having fun with science, or when you're describing people with Parkinson's and being able to feed themselves, that's just, it's incredible. you can imagine the feeling.
Thank you, Leila.
So, Anupam, just hearing this whole conversation about, you know, your pursuits in science and your pursuits with Lift Labs, with just all these million things that you do, what are some lessons you have learned that could help us? Some lessons which, you know, I think the one thing that I clearly see from the beginning is just your courage to get into whatever it is that you want to do and just doing it. And for many of us, the hardest thing is taking that plunge and just saying, okay, I know this is what I have to do, and just being able to say yes and taking that road, which may not have been taken by many, as Robert Frost would say. So what are some pointers you have for us who are struggling with that?
Yeah. I think so far, so this might change in 2 or 3 years, but I think so far I would say being persistent is very important, but it's not about just, you know, sticking with one idea and saying like, this is it and this is what it's going to be. It's more of a persistence of getting to whatever goal you're trying to get to, and so not giving up with that. And so the ideas and things like that may change completely when you're kind of working along the way. And so, like, an example is just, you know, developing a product, but this may not, maybe you're not even doing a product, but just getting feedback very early and keep getting feedback and, like, understanding what are the good, like, important things that you need to really consider and maybe change what you're doing. So being flexible, but also being extremely persistent to get to the end. I think that's important, and also not being afraid to kind of change things and redo things that in order to make them better. Finding good people to help and really good people to work with is also very important, and making sure that everybody's happy.
Wow.
I love how you ended with making sure that everybody is happy. So you touched a little bit upon the, you know, challenges you've had just getting into some of these ventures. How did you financially did you have a financial cushion, especially in the initial days with Lift Labs? Or if you didn't, can you tell us about some of those struggles and how you managed?
I think we were very fortunate to have gotten the grants from the government. And so that's what basically seeded the company. And so all of the government agencies have this program, but the NIH, National Institutes of Health, have some funding set aside for technologies that have high impact but maybe too risky for investors to put money into. And so we were basically supported by them, and so that was very we were very fortunate for that.
And we are very fortunate because that kind of ensured that your energy went into working on those beautiful assistive devices. So it actually was a blessing all around. What about with ExploraBox? I know that it's a non-profit. So how do you fund, the production of the boxes?
That's bootstrapped. So a few people from the community have donated. Nobody is getting any salary out of ExploraBox, but right. Whatever money is being used for materials right now. And that's just how we've been operating so far. And we haven't really had any need yet to change that. But I think we're not all, if we need to, for example, get people working full time, maybe that would happen in the future, but right now it's all kind of just bootstrapped and everybody's been volunteering to help.
Wow.
We spoke about the science fairs a little earlier. Are there other memorable experiences that come to your mind, you know, with ExploraBox when you've introduced it to schools or children, or even if it's Lift Labs, when you've some, you know, some really indelible impressions that have left when you've helped some people with using some of your products? Well, product sounds very market-oriented, but you know what I mean?
It's fine. It's the same. I think, yeah, so for, I mean, with ExploraBox, we had, I mean, the kind of, we were talking about technology. So, I mean, earlier, last year, I was just posting videos online of just different experiments I did, and one of them went viral by accident, so that was kind of funny. Like we got like 300,000 views in two days of some magnet experiment. So and we've had, I think even with Lift Labs, we'll probably get some attention like that too. Like we haven't had many of our videos. I've been holding off on putting videos of people using our device until we're ready to actually, like, we're ready for that attention. But yeah, just giving, when we give it to somebody and you can see, especially when the doctor sees the patient using before and after, just that difference is pretty huge. And I think they're just immediately convinced of how well it can work. So that's always very encouraging to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they say how, you know, when we have a good thought, it's when we just have the intention, it's amazing how different channels open up and we get support in so many ways from the universe. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, I think that especially, yeah, with both of these things, I think we've been getting, so one example with Lift Labs, we've had, I've had so many people helping. One person's been helping, like, I don't know, she's done so much for us. She's been working on all of, like, our branding, messaging, everything, and she's, like, very well respected in her field, and many times I've tried to pay her and she said no. And so I don't know like how to, I mean, she's just doing it because she really believes in what we're doing and wants to see us get be successful. And so I think that's just really, really inspiring for me to see people like that helping.
Awesome. So before I hand the call back to Kanchan for closing and gratitude, I just wanted to thank you. I'm, you know, being an educator myself, I always find myself thinking about how do I make my lessons more interesting for my students? What are some things they can do? And honestly, what happens is, you know, when you just get lost in just the tasks, the administrative and non-teaching tasks of teaching, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, with all the administrative expectations that come with it. And then, I mean, just, and for me, just to see someone who's, you don't really have a formal education background as such in teaching or in, you know, mm-hmm. how do you educate children, and you have come up with this phenomenal idea of ExploraBox, and I was looking at those kits, and I was thinking, maybe if I had those kits when I was growing up, my love for chemistry would have been totally different, or how I deal with physics would have been totally different. So right. I'm so thankful on behalf of all those students that you've touched and the many students are you're going to be touching with the different boxes, with ExploraBox. I am so thankful to you for making science fun and interactive, and thinking of, you know, I heard you mention about one of the patients with Parkinson's disease who was able to feed a child and who was able to, you know, actually have a meal without having the food spill over. And just to be able to give that gift of dignity to so many people. So I echo one of our callers who said you are spiritual, and I'm just really thankful to you for, you know, for just being who you are and doing so much of good to the world. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Anupam and Vinya, and for the wonderful conversation. Anupam, I was wondering if there is something we as a community can do to support your work. I'm going to send out your email to everyone. And but if there is something we can do as Service Base, as Forest Call, as this community of people interested in doing good to help support what you're doing.
I think the Explorer Box is in very good alignment with what you're like, I mean, how people can help, because we're just, I think any type of background really would be wonderful. I mean, as long as you're interested in helping kids and kind of enjoy that, and or even in a design side. So, I mean, there's many elements to what we're doing. There's the creation, the content creation, so whatever, like, kind of thing, topic that you're really excited about, like, finding, it's really fun to find, like, really simple hands-on things to do and kind of make those, and then we can work on making that into a kit, or graphic design, organizational, I mean, how we structure this, how logistically, how we end up kind of shipping these out and distributing, even volunteering, so going to the schools, going to these fairs, or how do we reach out to some of the lower-income schools and kind of create this outreach that we're, I mean, that's what the whole mission of what we're doing. So I think help in anything like that would be really, really appreciated, and also just help us be successful.
That's beautiful. So all the information about this would be on the website? Like, if I were to help, I want to volunteer, and if I go, I'd be able to find all the ways that I could contribute.
Yeah, I think just really getting in touch, probably my mom is the best and her email's on the website. So I think if you just go into About and click How to Help, you'll see that.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm sure there are many people on the call, and as when we post the blog and the audio, even more people will be interested in, and already some ideas came up during the call, like Audrey's idea of doing something for climate change or...
So definitely.
Thank you so much, Anupam, from the bottom of my heart. I've really enjoyed volunteering with you at Karma Kitchen several times, and I was aware that you're doing something good for the social change, but now it was really good to hear all the details and know more about the person behind all this. So really grateful to you for being on the call today.
Sure.